Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1177 of the Juice Box Podcast. Today, Jenny and I will be answering listener questions in another episode of Ask Scott and Jenny. Nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. When you place your first order for AG1 with my link, you'll get 5 free travel packs and a free year's supply of vitamin D. drinkag1.com/juicebox. If you have type 1 diabetes or are the caregiver of a type 1 and a U.S. resident, I'd love it if you would please go fill out the survey at t1dexchange.org/juicebox. This survey helps move type 1 diabetes research forward. It's very simple for you to do. You'll know all the answers to the questions. It won't take you much time, and you'll be helping. t1dexchange.org/juicebox. If you're looking for community around type 1 diabetes, check out the Juice Box Podcast private Facebook group, Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes. Don't forget, when you use my links, you're supporting the show, so look right there in the show notes of your podcast player or at juiceboxpodcast.com and make the clicky. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by US Med, usmed.com/juicebox, or call 888-721-1514. US Med is where my daughter gets her diabetes supplies from, and you could too. Use the link or number to get your free benefits check and get started today with US Med. Today's episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes, a company that's bringing together people who are redefining what it means to live with diabetes. Later in this episode, I'll be speaking with Mark. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 28. He's 47 now. He's going to tell you a little bit about his story. And then at the very end of the episode, you can hear my entire mini interview with Mark. To hear more stories from the Medtronic Champion community or to share your own story, visit MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox and check out the Medtronic Champion hashtag on social media. This show is sponsored today by the glucagon that my daughter carries, Gvoke HypoPen. Find out more at GvokeGlucagon.com/juicebox. Jenny and I have recorded an entire episode before we hit record, so we should. There's part of me that thinks that one day I should just like wind Jenny up and just let her talk, and then we should just record that. But we're back.
Caffeinate me.
Jenny, we are back to do an Ask Scott and Jenny episode, which we have not done in a hot minute. Let me see if I can tell you when the last one happened. But while I'm looking, you consider this. What should I do if I miss my MDI basal dose?
Oh, that's a really good question. Uh-huh. And I like that it's actually an injection question.
Mm-hmm. We don't get a lot of those.
We don't get a lot of them. And I think that there are definitely a lot of people still doing MDI that have great questions. And sure. I wish more people would ask them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, it does depend. So, you know, if you miss, let's say you're taking your basal insulin in the evening, you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh my goodness, I missed my basal insulin, right? I mean, you could down dose your basal insulin by taking some in the next morning when you wake up, right?
Okay.
If it's well beyond it, let's say you take your basal insulin in the evening and you realize at 1 o'clock in the afternoon that you missed your basal insulin and that's why blood sugars look strange, right? At that point, you are beyond taking that basal dose, even a portion of it. And what you may end up needing to do is just manage with more rapid acting insulin, right? Okay. You may need to cover, correct. You may need to even increase a slight amount, the amount of insulin that you give for your carbohydrate or your mealtime coverage, because you're missing that baseline. So you could expect your rapid acting insulin doses to try to be making up for that missing background. You can even see this when you're trying to do basal testing.
Yeah.
And you're evaluating and you're seeing, well, when I don't eat a meal, my basal causes my blood sugar to go up where it shouldn't. That is a basal deficit. But when you do eat a meal, it looks like everything is Perfect. Mm-hmm. That means that your rapid is covering some of what the basal should actually be covering.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts here and questions too. So there are older and newer basal insulins too. So like older, like Levemir, Lantus, newer, like Traceba, and what's the other one?
2JO, Basaglar.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they work on, so the knock on the older ones, Levemir, Lantus, are that they don't really last 24 hours sometimes. So you'll even, he'll hear people splitting insulin. So I can say that Arden used Levemir, but I'm out of the, I'm out of the old ass basal game at this point. But if I missed Arden's Levemir at 8 p.m. and she woke up at 8 a.m. and I was like, oh hell, I missed it. That's too long at that point, you think?
For something like, and that's great that you brought up the kinds of insulin for Levemir. Yes, okay. It's too long. Essentially, Levemir, for the most part, those who used it found essentially that they did need to dose it twice a day.
Yeah, we split it.
You split it too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, if you missed it at 8 p.m., by then you've missed the window of its most beneficial time period. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to dose again at 8 a.m., go ahead and just dose with what you dose normally.
And just start over, like, now we just do it at 8 a.m. now.
Well, if you just said you were dosing twice a day, yeah, though.
Yeah, well, we would
have. And that's why I was.
Yeah, in my scenario, I would have just given her half at 8 a.m. and then back again at half at 8 p.m. But for people who were doing it every 12 hours, or every 24 hours, excuse me, now they're 12 hours behind, and it probably didn't work up to the 24-hour mark to begin with. So, I mean, you could, if it was Levemir Landis, you could just say, oh, I guess we do our basal in the morning now. And do it, right? Like, and start in the morning? Or would you have lows that day from that, do you think?
With Levemir, I think that would have definitely been okay to navigate that way again, because for most people who had been using it, it was definitely a 12-hour. So they took it, and then they took it again within 12-hour time periods. So you miss one dose, you're kind of like over it.
Yeah.
You just wait until the next 12-hour dose. If you were more of a Lantus user, though, which is definitely longer lasting. I mean, most people got at least 20 hours of action out of their Lantus, or start to sort of peter out by 18 to 20 hours, right?
Yeah.
So therein lies the question, you know, you miss it into the next morning. Now you're 12 hours into missing your basal insulin. You could take some. How much? You could take a quarter, you could take a third of what your total dose had kind of been.
Get a helping hand.
Then essentially take it again at the next time period, or downplay that a little bit to kind of just coast you through the overnight without being too low.
Yeah. And then I guess be careful for like that 36-hour period that you're not seeing lows. By the way, I'll point out that in episodes about splitting insulin, you very firmly came down on the side of not splitting Lantus.
For the most part, yeah, I Lantus is, it's definitely longer than a 12-hour action. Mm. So if you're going to split it, you really have to be kind of cautious. I've seen some people with tinier doses do well potentially splitting it, because they get the heavier dose in a time of day where they really need that background insulin for whatever the reason.
Yeah.
And then maybe they just need a hint more to nudge them over into that, let's say they take it at breakfast and at dinner time, right? Heavy dose in the morning, it covers behind the majority of the activity and the variables of the day. But the overnight, they need just a hint more of it in order to not run high overnight or to graze up before they take their morning dose. So you might see something like, you know, 8 units in the morning and maybe a unit and a half in the afternoon or the evening time, right? But that's not the typical for that. Okay.
And to go to the more modern insulins, they actually seem to lap that 24-hour period, right? So
yeah, no, I think you're just going to say essentially that if you take it and you missed your dose, you may have up to about 36 hours.
You might get some coverage in there. Yeah.
You might. Yeah.
If you did that, say you missed Traceba and you waited the whole 24 hours to shoot it again, and you just managed on the, you know, with fast acting until you got back to your injection time, do you think the next day would look a little resistant too? Or do you think you'd be back to good after you injected it? If you take insulin or sulfonylureas, you are at risk for your blood sugar going too low. You need a safety net when it matters most. Be ready with Gvoke HypoPen. My daughter carries Gvoke HypoPen everywhere she goes, because it's a ready-to-use rescue pen for treating very low blood sugar in people with diabetes ages 2 and above that I trust. Low blood sugar emergencies can happen unexpectedly, and they demand quick action. Luckily, Gvoke HypoPen can be administered in 2 simple steps, even by yourself in certain situations. Show those around you where you store Gvoke HypoPen and how to use it. They need to know how to use Gvoke HypoPen before an emergency situation happens. Learn more about why Gvoke HypoPen is in Arden's Diabetes Toolkit at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. Gvoke shouldn't be used if you have a tumor in the gland on the top of your kidneys called a pheochromocytoma, or if you have a tumor in your pancreas called an insulinoma. Visit gvokeglucagon.com/risk for safety information.
You should be back to fairly good after you injected it, assuming that the dose that you had been using before missing a dose was pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the first thing that came to your mind, it's a good conversation, but the first thing that came to your mind was manage it to your next injection time with fast acting insulin. Okay. So is there a one-to-one thing there? Like if I'm injecting, I don't know, 10 units of Tresiba, is there an amount of fast acting every couple of hours that would like kind of keep me in the game? Not really.
Not really. What we'd usually recommend is with mealtimes, depending on where your blood sugar is, right? And possibly where it's trending. Again, the beautiful thing about having CGMs now is you can actually tell how things have been being held without a piece, you know, behind that would normally be there.
Okay.
So if you're rising, coming even into a mealtime, you can think ahead and say, well, the rise means I'm probably missing at least a half a unit of insulin, give or take person, you know, sensitivity versus resistance. And I've not even like eaten or bolused for my mealtime yet. I need to nudge this up minimally, and I'm going to be conservative about it because I'm not quite sure how much more I need behind this.
Okay.
Right.
What's your time frame for, I forgot my 6 p.m., you know, basal insulin injection, but it's only 7:30. Just throw it in then, right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
but how far away from that 6 before you can just go, oh, hell, and just do it? I mean, I know 3-4 hours, question. Maybe?
I would say 4 hours, quite honestly. Like if you're normally dosing 6 p.m., I mean, a lot of people take evening basal insulin, it's like 8 to 10 p.m. typically. Mm-hmm. Unless they've been told to take it with dinner or around dinner time, it's usually like more bedtime dose.
That's why I think of it that way, because it was because Arden was so small, it was part of the safety, like, oh, shoot it near a meal. Plus you're giving her needle then anyway. So it's not as, that's kind of how we used to think about it.
But yeah, if you are normally dosing it at 6 p.m. and you remember at bedtime at 10:30, you're, oh, darn, I missed, you know, go ahead and take it at that point. Right. Absolutely. Then just back it up the next day.
Oh, I see where your thought is then. Because, but if you forget it at 10, if you remember at 2, you're not awake at 2 a.m. to remember it. So unless you wake up in a cold sweat and go, oh my God.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's okay. I appreciate that one. That one's good.
Yeah.
Well, let's stick with this theme for a second inside of the theme a little bit. What should I do if I inject the wrong insulin? So
I've seen this so many times. And you know what? It seems to be more of an error on the side of I was supposed to take basal insulin and I injected 30 units of rapid insulin instead of taking my 30 units of basal insulin. That's the one that I see 99% of the time.
It never goes the other way. I was making a 2-unit correction and I used basal instead of my fast acting, right? Right. It's always like you just said, like this giant dose, even if you're a little kid. You know what I mean? Like, you know, 3 units of, you know, is a giant dose. So in case this isn't clear to everybody, some of the most, I find, interesting and heartfelt posts I've seen on Facebook are somebody who jumps on and says, hey, I just shot 20 units of Novolog instead of 20 units of Lantus. And I'm MDI and it's in. And what do I do? And I always think, what a great opportunity to understand how insulin works. I never say that out loud. Yeah, because they're usually running in circles like a chicken without their head.
You're not just like, hey, just sit and watch what happens. Yeah. I mean, that is not
don't sit around and wonder. No. Like, you know, so for my money, I do the math. I just say, you know, I shot 20 units of insulin. My insulin to carb ratio is 1 per this. that's how much food I get to eat now. Maybe add some fat, some ice cream. What a great time for a milkshake too. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, and that's, it depends. You know, if you have a fairly aggressive insulin to carb ratio, 20 units might not be a terrible amount, despite not necessarily wanting to add extra food.
Yeah.
20 units might be something you can clearly take care of and navigate and manage that problem.
Right.
If you, however, usually take one or two units to cover a meal of 30 grams worth of carb, 20 units is a whopping dose of insulin.
It's glucagon time then.
And that's glucagon time, or it may even be potentially that with enough sensitivity, you may end up actually just needing to go to the emergency department to be able to say, you know what, this is what I did. I definitely know that I'm going to need a glucose strip. I know that you're going to need to navigate this because I can't eat enough. I see often with kids where they just, their tummy is so little, they can only take so much juice.
Sure. Yeah, there's not. Yeah, and I wasn't making light of it. It's usually adults, but like, you know, that I see are like, but I've actually managed one of these through personally. So a girl, I don't remember her name anymore, came on the Facebook group and said, I just did this. And she was in a panic.
Yeah.
And she's home by herself. She was in her early 20s, right? And then the first comment that came to the Facebook group was call 911, which I think sent her spiraling. By the way, that's always like, you know, you always get one or two people who are like, oh, I know you asked for what color is the sky, but I'm going to tell you to call 911 instead. And like, you know, like, so she starts panicking. I can see her panicking. And I just said, give me your phone number. And I called her and I was like, hey, what's up? And she was upset.
Worried.
Yeah. I mean, she was panicked and with good reason. What I did was I said, all right, look, you know, what's your insulin to carb ratio? It's interesting that she went, I don't know.
Oh.
So I was like, you know how many people don't know stuff like that? They're like, I just usually do about this much for dinner and like blah, blah, blah. So I said, okay, I picked something that I knew how many carbs are in it. I was like, how much would you have bolus for this?
Yep.
And that she really like firmly understood. And I said, okay, so we're going to put your like insulin to carb ratio at like one unit for 15 carbs. And she's like, okay. And I said, well, how many units did you shoot? And then she told me, and then we did the math. And I said, all right, well, you get to eat 125 carbs right now. Like, you know, and then I was like, but then she was like a healthy eater. So then that wasn't that easy. You know what I mean? I was like,
get the Honey Nut Cheerios out right now.
She's like, oh, we don't eat that crap. And I'm like, oh God, okay. And so like, I was like, I had her open the refrigerator and we just went through it. Like shelf by shelf, line by line. We opened cabinets. We found enough stuff. At one point I said, even if we don't find anything, don't worry. I was like, there's a 5-pound bag of sugar in the house somewhere. We'll start eating that. Don't worry. It's going to happen. We're going to be okay. You know, I said, we'll mix sugar with water. There's all kinds of things we can, because they didn't keep a lot of juice in the house. Like she didn't have a lot of stuff and she got through it. She was okay. Yeah. You know, so
in that instance, in terms of the portion that it might need to take somebody, again, with the stomach capacity to handle, sometimes small, heavily packed carb types of foods are often a little bit better. You know, people think juice first, right? I always also think, despite being kind of panicked at that point, you have to say, well, am I like pretty stable right now? Or where is my blood sugar? You know, am I sitting already at like 72?
Right.
And if you are, okay, we need to get some quick something because this is rapid acting insulin and it is going to start working pretty quick, right? Whereas if you're sitting at 180, you've got a little bit of wiggle room there to navigate, and you may actually progress through rather than sitting down to the bowl of 125 grams of whatever it is going
to
be.
Yeah, you know, that's not as a clear thought to some people as you might think, because a lot of people see 180 and think, oh, I'm in range. Like, you know, they don't think about it the way you and I think about it. I'd be like, oh, we've got 100 points to play with here. And also the thing you said about juice, you can get juice sick really easy, like that nauseous feeling in your stomach where you, I can't do this anymore. And a big bolus will burn through a fast acting carb very quickly too. Like if you put in, you know, 10 units that aren't for anything, and like you said, you've only ever put in 2 units for your biggest meal in your whole life, drinking a juice isn't going to do crap. It's going to be like Jenny and I trying to stop like a NFL running back. We're going to be like, hey, don't. And you know, that's going to be the end of it. Like, for two seconds. Dense foods, slowly digesting stuff. That's the kind of, like, think about those foods that when you eat, you always end up bolusing more for. Have a little of that at this point. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And then, but you said go to the emergency room if you're, and I agree with that, but you can't just get in the car and drive to the emergency room because before you get there, it's, you get about 15 minutes if you're lucky, I would imagine. Right.
Correct. Yeah. Right. If you are the one and you're alone, as this young woman that you were helping was, clearly, that's probably not the best idea, especially considering she was very worried about what was going on.
Yeah.
It's better to actually get to at least a stable enough place with enough carb to be able to get to the potential of an emergency, you know, department to be able to help. Again, only as the last end kind of need. And again, what's the go-between in there? It's glucagon.
Yeah.
We have glucagon that absolutely can be used in the case of need.
Yeah, you got to have it with you. By the way, she did not have that either. She didn't have that. Oh. She couldn't reach her parents. Like, it was like a dumpster fire of like bad, you know, variables sure. for low food in the house. Like the whole, I don't know, I'll never forget, like, I also never forget feeling panicked about it because everybody was like, just do this. And I'm like, somebody's got to actually help her.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, she can't, she was panicking and she was young and she was by herself. And I was like, I'm going to like, just call me or I'll call you or whatever.
And that's what she needed. Rather than reading and reading and reading the 50 comments that came in,
I got worried about that. Yeah.
You start to go down this and instead of doing, you're reading.
You start wondering which one of these is the right thing to do. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So you just need one person to take into. You need that verbal, that human connection, which is.
By the time we were done, she was eating bread. I was like, eat bread. That's good. I was like, have some bread. We're going to, that's what I did. I mixed bread.
Put some jam on there.
Bread with sugar and peanut butter and like anything like that. Like I kept hitting her like fast and slow digesting carbs at the same time. Anyway.
Honey is a pretty packed one too. Honey and maple syrup from the standpoint of the content of carb. I mean, a tablespoon of honey is like 17 grams of carb, and maple syrup is even heavier.
Yeah, that's so, a consideration too, like bulk of food. Like, I feel like this has been said, but it's worth saying again, you can't just start with like, I'll eat grapes, like, because you're going to fill up before you get to the carb number. You know what I mean? Like, you need something that's going to hit you really. Like, and by the way, once you get through that 3 hours after you've injected it, start over again. You know what I mean? So,
right.
Yeah. She's trying to stay alive at that point. Diabetes comes with a lot of things to remember. So it's nice when someone takes something off of your plate. US Med has done that for us. When it's time for Arden's supplies to be refreshed, we get an email. Rolls up and in your inbox says, hi Arden, this is your friendly reorder email from US Med. You open up the email, it's a big button that says, click here to reorder, and you're done. Finally, somebody taking away a responsibility instead of adding one. US Med has done that for us. An email arrives, we click on a link, and the next thing you know, your products are at the front door. That simple. usmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. I never have to wonder if Arden has enough supplies. I click on one link, I open up a box, I put the stuff in the drawer, and we're done. US Med carries everything from insulin pumps and diabetes testing supplies to the latest CGMs like the Libre 3 and the Dexcom G7. They accept Medicare nationwide, over 800 private insurers, and all you have to do to get started is call 888-721-1514 or go to my link, usmed.com/juicebox. Using that number or my link helps to support the production of the Juice Box podcast. Right now, we're going to hear from a member of the Medtronic Champion community. This episode of the Juice Box podcast is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes. And this is Mark.
I used injections for about 6 months, and then my endocrinologist in the Navy recommended a pump.
How long had you been in the Navy?
8 years up to that point.
I've interviewed a number of people who have been diagnosed during service, and most of the time they're discharged. What happened to you?
I was medically discharged. Yeah, 6 months after my diagnosis.
Was it your goal to stay in the Navy for your whole life, your career?
It was, yeah. In fact, I think a few months before my diagnosis, my wife and I had that discussion about, you know, staying in for the long term. And, you know, we'd made the decision, despite all the hardships and time away from home, that was what we loved the most.
Was the Navy a lifetime goal of yours?
Lifetime goal. I mean, as my earliest childhood memories were flying, being a fighter pilot.
How did your diagnosis impact your lifelong dream?
It was devastating. Everything I had done in life, everything I'd worked up to that point was just taken away in an instant. I was not prepared for that at all.
What does your support system look like?
friends, your family, caregivers, you know, for me, the Medtronic Champions community, you know, all those resources that are out there help guide the way, but then help keep abreast on, you know, the new things that are coming down the pipe and to give you hope for eventually that we can find a cure.
Stick around at the end of this episode to hear my entire conversation with Mark. And you can hear more stories from Medtronic Champions and share your own story at MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox. Jenny, this one's interesting. I always have a weird feeling when I see people worried about this, but it happens all the time. So let's talk about it from a technical standpoint.
Oh, okay.
What should I be doing? What should my kid be doing in the event of a school lockdown? My first thought is always what I told Arden was, turn off all your alarms first. I was like, because you're going to get upset, your blood sugar is going to shoot up, and we don't need a beacon going off over your head if there is actually a person wandering around your school with a gun. I mean, I guess that is part of it, huh? Like, you got to quiet your stuff, your technology.
I was actually going more from the what should you have on your person.
I was thinking you'd go that way, so I went this way. Yeah.
Yeah, no, or the easy to grab bag, right? It's almost like the T1D to go kind of bag that you have next to your, you know, garage door or in the back of your car, whatever. It's got packed with like everything. And I think at school for any age kid, especially maybe the high school age, even middle school, where they're probably more so taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't have a checkpoint really, right? And so they need to be ready to grab something and run and go wherever they're being told to kind of come together, right?
Yeah.
But the alarms, that's a great one.
I mean, so what we did for Arden was, like you said, in younger ages, they don't leave a room usually. They stay in a room. They do everything in a room. But once she started moving around room to room, we stocked every room with a few juice boxes and some snacks, fast acting, you know, sugar and something a little more substantial. Mm-hmm. Something that was, you know, is all like wrapped in a package. It wasn't going to go bad the whole year, like that kind of thing.
Right.
We also started to notice there were times of day she was low and times of day she wasn't. So we would more heavily stock some classrooms than other classrooms. But that's my first thought is, this isn't something you do in the event of. This is something you do ahead of time, you know, my opinion. Time. Yeah. So right. I would have each classroom have some stuff in it. Mm-hmm. Now, the insulin part, I hear what people are saying because I've watched them have these conversations online. What if this goes 12 hours? What if this goes 2 days? Like, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I don't know how you're supposed to plan for that. You can't have insulin in every room. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
I am a big fan of the kids carrying their stuff on them.
Correct.
You know, your controller for your pumps, you know, glucagon should be with you, not in the nurse's office. Yep. I mean, it should be in the nurse's office too, but with you. I think you also start going into like survival mode.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, dial back your basal a little bit if you're on a pump, like keep out of a low situation, you know, like nothing wrong with 150 blood sugar for 12 hours while you're sitting on the floor, if that's what's going to happen.
Correct.
Do you have any other thoughts about that?
No, I mean, it's a really, really good question. Honestly, I don't have any other thoughts. I guess outside of maybe in terms of what you're talking about and how you had stocked your daughter's sort of school rooms accordingly.
Yeah.
I wonder if also discussing with your school, where is the place that in an emergency you would bring the kids, right? Or where does her grade go compared to the other grades?
If they evacuate the kids.
If they evacuated them to a safe location or something like that, you need to know where to stock extra beyond the classrooms that she or he would normally be in.
Yeah. This is not diabetes related, but I'm interested. Have you spoken to your boys about this? Have you ever talked to them about something like this? They're pretty young, but...
They're pretty young, but they have their schools... have done age-appropriate education about what it would mean if there was somebody in the school that wasn't supposed to be there. That's kind of how it's addressed, to be less scary, right? And they've done drills. I mean, that's the schools, at least the ones that my boys have gone to, they've done drills, almost like a tornado drill or, you know, something like that to say, this is where we go, this is what we do. Yeah, all of those kinds of things are typically practiced, unfortunately, these days. I mean, the most that I had when I was little was like a tornado and a fire drill.
Yeah. Stop, drop, and roll and sit under your desk so that they'll find your body under the desk. And so I'll tell you what I've told my kids. Now, they've both been through high school already. And I will say the caveat is they mostly were in a school with one level.
Okay.
But the high school did have two levels. I very clearly told them, run to a window, jump out the window, zigzag to the tree line, find your way home. That's pretty much what I told them. I was like, do not sit around waiting for Mrs. What's-her-name over here to save you. Like, she don't know what to do. Okay. She barely understands English. And she's teaching it.
Get out of the room.
I says, I swear to God, if you're on the first floor, up on the countertop, window open, out the window, zig, 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 into the trees, get the hell out of there. Like, that's probably not the right thing to do, but I swear to God, that's what I told both of them. And I wasn't kidding. Like, one time they looked at me like, really? I'm like, yes, run away. I'm just like, run. The hell, you don't have to be faster than everybody, just the bear. What is that joke? It's not a joking matter. But Jenny, seriously, like that's what I told him. I was like, get the hell out of the building and run. So
if you can, I mean, in certain circumstances where you're not quite sure where the trouble is coming from, is it still outside the school? Is it in the school already? Can you hear noises? What I mean, it's just a completely unknown.
It's a horror.
So, and I don't even know if all schools have windows that open.
Well, listen, if it doesn't, throw a desk out the window, then follow along after. I'm mean, like, get the hell out of but back to the diabetes portion of it. You can't have insulin everywhere.
No.
You just can't. So if you have a pump on, I think my best thought is you go back to very low settings so that you don't go into, you know,
don't waste your insulin. Don't go low.
Yeah, and don't go low. Just try to stretch it out as best you can.
Yeah.
And have food wherever you are. That's my thought. I would even say if you got into a dire situation and you didn't have food and the time really started going on, you know, your kids should probably know how to like temp basal off for a while, let their blood sugar rise a little bit, put it back on again. Like, I mean, it all depends on how much you want to like talk to them about this stuff, honestly, you know?
Correct. And at what age, I guess an age appropriate way. And depending, as you just said, on what they know about their system, do they know enough to be able to go in? And these should be things you've practiced ahead of time. Ahead of a very emergent situation, you should have practiced how to suspend a pump or how to set a temporary rate or how to take the algorithm off and go back to manual mode so that you can actually do some of these manual kinds of considerations. And some of them, you know, you might have an 8-year-old who's really awesome and can do all of these things, understandably, and you might not.
I also want to say, I just did a quick Googling. This is a number from November of 2023. I hate to say this, but the odds of a child in the U.S. being killed in a school shooting are 1 in 614 million. So, I mean, it's sad for the people it happens to, of course, and obviously, but I mean, I think if you're planning on this one, you've run out of things to plan for, is kind of my opinion. But anyway, let's find something more upbeat. Jenny. Oh, we're talking. I just realized we're talking about diabetes when I said that. And I look down, I see the word gastroparesis. I see LDL, and I'm like, what upbeat things are going to be here? There's no upbeat.
I'm sorry.
So I'm going to pick the one upbeat thing.
Okay.
Of the latest advancements in diabetes cures, which is in quotes, which one, Jenny, do you find the most intriguing?
Oh, I think the most intriguing for me are the insulins that are the smart insulin type. That's very intriguing to me. Years ago, I attended a technologies and a scientific advancement sort of presentation in which a gentleman presented on something that he was calling smart insulin. And it worked almost like a thermostat. It was injected once a day. It covered basal and bolus insulin needs. And it turned on and off based on the glucose level in circulation. So it was something that in terms of, you know, navigating, you don't necessarily need even a pump at that point, right? So that type of science is very interesting to me because outside of a true cure for solving the issue, something like this would definitely take care of a lot of the variables. That most people are trying to navigate around. It's not the baseline understanding that's so difficult.
Yeah.
it's the navigating all the little individual day-to-day things that could impact what you know about insulin action for you, right? So that one definitely. And then I think the other one, it's similar. It has to do with insulin, but it's more the encapsulated beta cells. Mm-hmm. You know, the person who receives them actually doesn't have to have the immunosuppressive drugs that are most typical when you get a transplant of sorts,
yeah.
Right? In order for the body to not get rid of them and see them as foreign. And that's the encapsulation component of it, is to prevent the body from seeing it as foreign.
Yeah,
So
that one was on my list. Veritex is one of the one of the companies, but actual beta cells inside of a packet,
like bubble wrap,
yeah, that they almost put under your skin, and your immune system can't see through the package to see that there's somebody else's cells in there. So they're working, but they can't get attacked. Mm-hmm. They've been at that one for a while. And I have had someone on this podcast who was in a double-blind study.
Oh.
So they did not know if they were actually having it or not. But she said that by the time they removed it, she was sure she had it, and her insulin needs were pretty much gone.
Wow.
So, yeah. And isn't that crazy, though? She was in a study. So it was working, and they took it out of her.
They took it out. You're like, no. That's where I'm like, I find my own island somewhere.
Well, I
live.
She was lovely. She's like, I love helping research. I was like, I would have run away. I would have been like, you are not taking this back from me. I wouldn't give you my TiVo back. You're definitely not getting this. Cloud DVR, you can't have that back. You're not getting back my back. So I was going to say that one as well. And again, I think it's important we talk about this stuff to say, I first started hearing about this 15 years ago. So don't start saving your nickels up for it just yet. And that is going to be the next part of it is, and you can see it with GLPs right now, the people with the best insurance or the people who are hooked up or the people who have cash are going to go first. And it ain't just going to be for the first week and a half. So just, don't get too excited. I will throw in T-Zield because I've interviewed people from that company a number of times and they've never said it. And now Sanofi owns it. So I'm not talking about you, Sanofi. I'm talking about the people I spoke to before who worked at Provention Bio. I could mm-hmm. always hear in their voice, this is what we're using it for now, to kind of hold off the diagnosis. But we really wonder if there's not more to it than that. So that to me was really interesting. In that same vein, one of the Provention Bio, Francisco Leon, he said to me, I would love there to be a vaccine for hand, foot, mouth. And I was like, what? And he goes, well, so many people are diagnosed with type 1 after getting Coxsackie virus. I wish there was a Coxsackie vaccine. Because I think if we could slow down people from getting Coxsackie virus, maybe we could put off people getting type 1 diabetes.
The percentage that were going to be affected.
Made mm-hmm. me cry because my kid had Coxsackie virus when she was 2 and then she got type 1 diabetes. So he's talking, I'm crying. I'm like, that's a good idea.
That must have been the one that was, it was a while ago you it's talked been years to him now. Because he came up with the idea of its application in autoimmune disease, not specific to type 1 initially.
Yeah.
He was looking at something else, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah. So if you want to pick through my brain, that to me, it's nice that somebody's trying to stop type 1 or something like that. I think that if you want to push mankind forward, you got to figure out why our bodies react oddly to things and figure out how to stop that. Yeah. That's
absolutely
the bigger problem. There's a gentleman on the show today, sarcoidosis. Which is an autoimmune.
Sarcoidosis.
Yeah. Had mm-hmm. to have his colon removed. And the sarcoidosis is still going after him in different places in his body. You know what I mean?
And sarcoidosis is one of those that affects each person who has it differently.
Yeah. No, it's a hell of an interview. I think it's in the 1100s maybe. But mm-hmm. my point is that that's an autoimmune issue.
Yes.
Whether you have hay fever or you get hives and you don't know why, or your body's attacking your thyroid or your pancreas or anything, that's the thing. I mean, I think we should be dropping everything and looking at that because that fixes everything else. You know what I mean?
Among many other things, what should we be looking at and what should we be doing in our world our money rather than looking for aliens in the outer space?
Listen, if we don't get hit by a comet, I think 500,000 years ago from now, we're going to have all the answers we need. So you know what? Let me be serious here because we're kind of coming up on the end here.
Yes.
I think if you want to hope for something, hope that AI can get to the point where it can run these tests and get smart enough to break them down. Because much like everything else in the world, what's slowing us down is us. We're only so smart. We only, you know, we only work 9 to 5. You might have to live a whole generation of people to get an idea weeded out of education to get back to somebody focused again. Like, you want a computer running and rerunning and running and rerunning and going here, here, here. Like, I think, you know, if, you know, that would go much quicker. I'll use as an example, I don't know how many people track stuff like this. In a Tesla, in a car, they have self-driving. Now, a lot of cars have self-driving now, but Tesla's is pretty far ahead of the rest of them. And one thing that that company did was they built their own supercomputer just to look at the data from self-driving to teach self-driving how to get better.
To get better.
That's what you need for healthcare. You know what I mean? You need something smarter than us running and rerunning ideas over and over again. I think that's actually the thing you should be hoping for. You know.
And then maybe it's interesting because if you had something like that pointing out exactly what some of the things we know about healthcare and longevity and overall body systems and how to keep yourself healthy, maybe people would take it better from a computer algorithm instead in terms of pointing out, hey, if you do step one, step two, step three, and do this in your life, you don't have to take X, Y, and Z pills because you could already solve this without putting money out of your pocket. Right? So maybe they would take it better.
Yeah. Also, if you thought that at the end of 60 days of taking vitamin D, you'd actually feel better. But that's not what happens. You take it one day, you go, I don't feel any better.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But with the historical data that maybe would be compiled by a system like this, you would read it and you would say, oh, I understand.
I have to do this for 60 days. Jenny, listen, I'm now months and months and months into a better health regimen. Because of the GLP medication, I'm actually absorbing my nutrients now and my vitamins and everything. Before, I think I was taking them, they were just like kind of flushing right through.
You had expensive poop, essentially.
I am. Well, yeah, expensive is not half the word for it. But that's very funny. But I'm going to tell you now, my energy is such that sometimes at night, I think I'm not even tired. Like the end of the day comes and I'm like, I can keep going. Like I go to bed, but I lay there. I'm like,
what could I be doing?
Yeah. I'm going to close my eyes and go to sleep. But if I wanted to get up, I could do something for 2-3 more hours. I'm like, okay, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like I know some of that's weight loss, but I actually think I'm taking in these, you know, this stuff now. All right. We have like a couple of minutes left. Is that right?
Sure. Yes.
This might end up being what they call tickle your with a feather. I don't know if you know that phrase or not, because I think this is a bigger thing than we can tackle in a couple of minutes. But I am very interested in this conversation. Should people be on statins if their lipids are okay?
Oh.
We can't do it now, right? Maybe the next Ask Scott and Jenny?
I liked your tickle with a feather concept.
It's called tickle my ass with a feather, because then you think, oh, the next time this Ask Scott and Jenny comes on, they'll talk about lipids, and then I'll go back to it. Yeah, it's like, it's my own Who Shot JR, which nobody understands. Never mind.
Yes, I feel like I can be very honest in terms of what my perception from a medical, like physiology standpoint is with that. I hold nothing to any company or whatever. And if you have a healthy lifestyle and you have healthy intake and you have healthy lipid numbers and all of those types of things, you are not the population that a lipid or that a statin is going to be beneficial for. In fact, there are multiple reasons that you probably shouldn't. Now, somebody is going to beat me up about this. I don't care, quite honestly, but these are medications that are, to begin with, they're Band-Aids. They're meant to fix something that isn't quite right in your body. Many times it's lifestyle. Truly, right? Yeah. And there's a whole host of navigating things. And if you really do your research and you really look at where funding comes from, you will find the reason.
Are you saying that if I manufacture a statin and I get insurance to cover a statin if you have diabetes, then what's the phrase I'm looking for? Everything looks like a nail if all you have is a hammer. Mm. Yeah. So the doctor goes, I was told to give people diabetes statins.
Thank you for saying it.
Okay,
yes.
Sure. That's what I was thinking.
There you go. Yeah, okay. That's 100% it. Like I, and not 100%. Like I said,
There are people who need them too. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, there are people who may need them, but the bulk of people who are being prescribed them, they don't need them. Mm. They don't need them. And there are whole hosts of reasons around the world of people who have diabetes that they are 100% prescribed, even to those. And a lot of people question, they say, well, I told my doctor I'm healthy. All my numbers are in range. I've never taken this before. Why are you prescribing it? Oh, but it's preventative.
Those are the people I'm talking about.
Preventative.
Yeah. Listen,
right? But it's preventing me from what?
Yeah. From in case this happens one day, maybe. Yeah, no, I think it's preventing you from being able to afford a cup of coffee because you're buying the statins now. Listen, I have long not answered this question because I'm not a doctor and I have no idea. And I know it's going to get confused because there are some people who need statins, okay?
Right,
but
yes.
I think that what happened was is they became prescribable and covered by insurance if you have diabetes. And so it becomes whisper down the lane. And before you know it, we're 5 years into it and a doctor's handing out statins like candy, and they don't even know why. It's just what we do for people with diabetes, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of them a lot of them know the baseline of what they've been told about prescribing it. It is called preventative medicine, right? The other one that very similarly are blood pressure meds. For people who come in who, again, healthy lifestyle, healthy intake, all of their, you know, their lipid panel looks lovely, their blood pressure is nowhere near needing treatment.
And they're taking it anyway because they have diabetes.
And they've been told to take it because it's preventative.
Yeah. Let's say Jenny's not walking around with her man wearing a condom 24/7. They put it on when they need it.
There you go.
Oh my God, that'd be so uncomfortable.
Oh, that's so funny.
We'll talk more about that in the next one. And here's a little highlight for people in the next one. We're going to answer this one in the next one too. Hey, Scott, I've listened to your episodes on GLP and your diaries about your weight loss. Well done. Congratulations. I know you said that you think that GLPs or meds like them will become much more frequently used for people with type 1. Can you please go into more detail about why you think that? Oh, and then this one, I'm hearing rumblings about them potentially causing gastroparesis. They cause gastroparesis on purpose. They slow down your digestion on purpose, which is called gastroparesis, just not in the way you're thinking of it if you have type 1. Okay, so we'll do that one.
Slowing down digestion definitely is different in terms of why it's happening, right? Than having actual gastroparesis.
Yeah, caused by type 1, as a side effect of type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. Oh, look at this. I've heard Jenny competed in an Ironman. Oh, there's going to be plenty of stuff next time. All right. Thank you, Jenny.
Two halves. I want to clear that. Two half Ironman. They were not full Ironman.
Oh my God, that you're more worried about than getting yelled at about the statins. You're like, I don't need to hear from those Iron Man people. Jesus.
All good. Right,
I'll see you.
Thanks.
A huge thanks to US Med for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box podcast. Don't forget, usmed.com/juicebox. This is where we get our diabetes supplies from. You can as well. Use the link or call 888-721-1514. Use the link or call the number, get your free benefits check so that you can start getting your diabetes supplies the way we do from US Med. A huge thank you to one of today's sponsors, Gvoke Glucagon. Find out more about Gvoke HypoPen at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. You spell that GVOKEGLUCAGON.com/juicebox. Mark is an incredible example of what so many experience living with diabetes. You show up for yourself and others every day, never letting diabetes define you. And that is what the Medtronic Champion community is all about. Each of us is strong, and together, we're even stronger. To hear more stories from the Medtronic Champion community, or to share your own story, visit medtronicdiabetes.com/juicebox. Don't forget, we still have Mark's conversation at the very end. It's a terrific kind of mini episode, about 10 minutes long, that goes deeper into some of the things that you heard Mark talking about earlier in the show. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. The Diabetes Variables series from the Juice Box Podcast goes over all the little things that affect your diabetes that you might not think about. From travel and exercise to hydration and even trampolines. Juiceboxpodcast.com. Go up in the menu and click on Diabetes Variables. And now my full conversation with Medtronic champion, Mark. Mark, how old were you when you were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes?
I was 28.
28. How old are you now?
47.
So just about 20 years?
Yeah, 19 years.
What was your management style when you were diagnosed?
I used injections for about 6 months, and then my endocrinologist in the Navy recommended a pump.
How long had you been in the Navy?
8 years up to that point.
8 years.
Yeah.
I've interviewed a number of people who have been diagnosed during service, and most of the time they're discharged. What happened to you?
I was medically discharged. Yeah, 6 months after my diagnosis.
I don't understand the whole system. Is that like honorable?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, essentially, if you get a medical discharge, you get a commensurate honorable discharge. I guess there could be cases where something other than that, but that's really how it happens. So it's an honorable discharge but because of medical reasons.
And that still gives you access to the VA for the rest of your life, right?
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Do you use the VA for your management?
Yeah, I used to up until a few years ago when we moved to North Carolina. It just became untenable. Mm-hmm. Just the rigmarole and process to kind of get all the things I needed, you know, for diabetes management. It was far easier just to go through a private practice.
Was it your goal to stay in the Navy for your whole life, your career?
It was. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I think a few months before my diagnosis, my wife and I had that discussion about, you know, staying in for the long term. And, you know, we'd made the decision despite all the hardships and time away from home. That was what we loved the most. So that's what made it that much more difficult.
Was the Navy a lifetime goal of yours or something you came to as an adult?
Lifetime goal. I mean, as my earliest childhood memories were flying, being a fighter pilot, and specifically being, flying on and off aircraft carriers. So, you know, watching Top Gun in the 80s certainly was a catalyst for that.
You've taken off and landed a jet on an aircraft carrier?
Hundreds of times.
Is there anything in life as exhilarating as that?
No, but there's a roller coaster I rode at, Cedar Rapids up in Cleveland, mm-hmm. Sandusky. And they've got this roller coaster that takes you from zero to, I think it's like 80 or something. You go up a big hill and you come right back down. So the acceleration is pretty similar, I would say, to a catapult shot.
I'm going to guess you own a Tesla.
I don't. Okay. I'm a boring guy. I got a hybrid RAV4. I get made fun of. I get called, you know, my wife says I drive like a grandpa. I'm a 5 miles per hour over the speed limit person, no more than that. So yeah, in the car, I'm boring, Scott.
So you've never felt a need to try to replace that with something else?
You can't replace it. It's irreplaceable.
That's what I thought.
So up until the point where someone, you know, buys me an F-18 or allows me to get inside a 2-seater and fly it, you can't replace it.
How did it make you feel when you saw, or maybe you haven't seen, a gentleman named Pietro has his large aircraft license. He's flying for a major carrier now. He has type 1 diabetes.
Yeah,
this episode of Ask Scott and Jenny.
Yeah, it does.
Talk about what you should do if you miss your MDI basal.
The FAA prohibited commercial pilots.
What should I do if I've injected the wrong
insulin? I think it was 2017.
What do I do in the event of a school lockdown?
What advanced to be commercial pilots? And part of the reason they did that was because of the technology advancements, specifically in pump therapy and pump management. So I don't have any aspirations of going to the commercial airlines, but one of my sons who has type 1 diabetes very much wants to be a commercial pilot. So, you know, in that respect, I'm very hopeful and thankful.
Yeah. Do you fly privately now for pleasure?
I do. Yeah. One of my favorite things to do is fly my kids to the different soccer tournaments I have all over the Southeast U.S. So last week, my wife and I and two of our boys flew up to Richmond for their soccer tournaments up there. And Charlie, who's my middle child, has type 1 diabetes. So, you know, if I can combine flying, family, and football in one weekend, to me, that's, I think I've just achieved Valhalla.
So then it sounds to me like this diagnosis was a significant course correction for you. Can you tell me how it affected your dream?
Well, I guess 3 words come to mind. First, it was devastating. Everything I had done in life, everything I'd worked up to that point was just taken away in an instant. And I was not prepared for that at all. The second emotion was it was scary. I hadn't thought much about life outside the Navy, certainly not life as anything else but a fighter pilot. And Heather and I were getting ready to move to France. I was going to do an exchange tour with the French Naval Air Force. So we were taking French classes. So pretty quickly, I had to reinvent myself. And then probably the most important thing at the same time that all that was going on, I had to learn how to deal with type 1 diabetes and how to manage it effectively. The third thing that pops into my mind, I guess, is challenging. You know, new daily routines I had to establish, first with injections and then eventually, you know, through pump management. And then learning how to count carbs and recognize highs and lows, how my body reacts to blood sugar trends based on exercise and stress and those types of things. And my goal at that time, and it still is today, is to leverage technology and make sure my habit patterns are effective so that I take diabetes management from the forefront to the background.
Have you had success with that? Do you feel like you've made the transition well?
I have. I mean, I believe in continuous improvement, so there's always more to do. I will say the technology since I was diagnosed, specifically with pump management, is just incredible. It takes less of me intervening, and it's really done by the pump itself and by the algorithms through the CGMs. And to me, again, that should be the goal for everybody, is to not have to focus so much on the daily aspects of type 1 diabetes management. You know, we should let technology do that for us.
What else have you found valuable? I've spoken to thousands of people with type 1 diabetes. The one thing that took me by surprise, because I don't have type 1 myself and my daughter was very young when she was diagnosed, I didn't really understand until I launched this podcast and then it grew into this kind of big Facebook presence. I heard people say, I don't know anybody else who has type 1 diabetes. I wish I knew more people. But until I saw them come together, I didn't recognize how important it was.
Yeah, I think similarly, I didn't know anyone with type 1 diabetes growing up as an adult up until when I was diagnosed. And then all of a sudden, people just came out of the woodwork. And when CGMs first hit the market, certainly within the last 5 years, it's amazing to me and my family how many people we've noticed with type 1 diabetes simply because you can see the CGM on their arm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say a month does not go by where we don't run into someone at a restaurant or an amusement park or a sporting event or somewhere where we see somebody else with type 1 diabetes. And the other surprising aspect of that is just how quickly you make friends. And I'll give an example. We were at a soccer tournament up in Raleigh this past Saturday and Sunday, and the referee came over to my son, Charlie, at the end of the game and said, "Hey, I noticed you were wearing a pump." And he lifted up his shirt and showed his pump as well and said, "I've had type 1 diabetes since I was 9 years old. I played soccer in college. I'm sure that's your aspiration. And I just want to tell you, don't let type 1 diabetes ever stop you from achieving your dreams and what you want to do." And this gentleman was probably in his, you know, late 50s or 60s. So just having that connection and seeing, you know, the outreach and people's willingness to share their experiences, it just means the world to us and just makes us feel like we're part of a strong community.
Yeah. So would you say that the most important things are strong technology, tools, understanding how to manage yourself, and a connection to others?
Yeah, technology for sure, and knowing how to leverage it. And then the community, and that community is your friends, your family, caregivers. You know, for me, the Medtronic Champions community, you know, all those resources that are out there to, you know, help guide the way, but then help you keep abreast on, you know, the new things that are coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
And to give you hope for eventually, you know, that we can find a cure.
You mentioned that your son wanted to be a pilot. He also has type 1 diabetes. How old was he when he was diagnosed?
So Henry was diagnosed when he was 12 years old. It was just at the start of COVID. We were actually visiting my in-laws in Tennessee. We woke up in the morning and he had wet his bed. And several years before that, we had all four of our boys tested for TrialNet. So, you know, predictor of whether or not they're going to develop type 1 diabetes. And Henry and one of his brothers tested positive for a lot of the indicators. So we always kind of had an inclination that there was a high degree of possibility he would develop it, but we always had it in the back of our mind as well. And so when that event happened at the beginning of COVID, we had him take his blood sugar on my glucometer and it was over 400. And so right away we knew that without even being diagnosed properly by an endocrinologist that he was a type 1 diabetic. So we hurried home to get him properly diagnosed in Charlottesville. And then we just started the process. First grieving, but then acceptance and, you know, his eventual becoming part of the team that nobody wants to join.
How old is he now?
Yeah, he's 15 years old now.
When's the first time he came to you and said, is this going to stop me from flying?
Almost immediately. So like me, he always had aspirations of flying. In fact, he, out of all four boys, wanted to be in the military. And that was a difficult part of the conversation and maybe something that we don't talk about as a community. But there are some things you cannot do as a type 1 diabetic. And that's a hard fact of life. And unfortunately, joining the military is one of those hard and fast things. You cannot be join the military as a type 1 diabetic. So that was very difficult for him and for me and my wife to get over. Then we also started talking about being a commercial pilot. And so I saw that same excitement in his eyes because, like me, you know, he can be in an F-18 or a 737 or a Cirrus SR-20 that I fly and be just as happy. Yeah. So he still has that passion today and still very much plans to eventually become a commercial pilot.
I appreciate you sharing that with me. Thank you. Do you have four children? Do any others have type 1?
They do. My oldest twin, Henry, has type 1 diabetes, and my middle son, Charlie, has type 1 diabetes as well.
The boys are twins.
The oldest two are twins. One has type 1 diabetes. My middle son, who is not a twin, has type 1 diabetes.
I see. Is there any other autoimmune in your family?
There isn't. I'm really the only person in my family or my wife's family that we know of with any sort of autoimmune disease, certainly type 1 diabetes. So unfortunately, I was the first to strike it rich and unfortunately pass it along to two of my sons.
But celiac, thyroid, anything like that?
Nothing. We're really a pretty healthy family. So this came out of nowhere for myself and for my two sons.
That's really something. I appreciate your time very much. And I appreciate you sharing this with me. Thank you very much.
Anytime, Scott.
Learn more about the Medtronic Champion community at MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox or by searching the hashtag Medtronic Champion on your favorite social media platform. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. WrongWayRecording.com.